This is a HeadGum Original.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
When I was growing up, everyone in town knew my dad. We really couldn't go anywhere without him being recognized. At the mall, at McDonald's, at the library. My dad was famous because he was on TV 5 days a week.
The TV 13 newsroom.
He was the local weatherman on KRCG TV 13, Monday through Friday on the 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock news.
Bill Ratliff with the weather and Jim Reek with sports.
It wasn't until I was a little older that I realized that it wasn't normal for everybody to know who your dad is.
Around central Missouri, we're going to see some rain too. Not like Bob, but it's going to be coming down in our area before too much longer.
And it never bothered me. But then again, my dad was only regionally famous. It's not like everyone in the world knew who he was. I could get away from it if I needed to.
The high today was 92 degrees, the overnight low 64, the Missouri River at 11.9 feet, the Osage at 2.
Oh, man. It's so funny that you say this because I had a very surreal experience 2 weeks ago. So I went to college in Westchester, California, at Loyola Marymount. And I was in the car driving down the street with a friend of mine and drive by this bus stop, and there's a poster of Private Ryan. It's like a lull in the conversation that I'm having with this friend of mine. And she goes to me, she goes, "That was weird." And I go, "What?" She goes, "Do you ever see a poster for your dad and go like, oh, there you are?" And I just laughed and I said, "No, but I probably will now." And 2 weeks ago, I happened to be driving down that same street and I saw that bus stop. And the first thing I thought was, "Oh, there you are." Even though it was just the bus stop.
Yeah. This is Colin Hanks. We have a lot in common. We're both working actors. We were both cast in Band of Brothers. And both of our dads are kind of a big deal.
Are you exhausted about people either bringing up the topic or deliberately holding back the topic of your dad?
That's a complicated question because there's technically two answers. None of it surprises me anymore. So I constantly am aware that it is out there and that it will probably be commented on. But yeah, it's exhausting and I'm tired of it because it's not the most interesting thing in the world for me. It's something that you don't think about, but everyone asks you about it, and therefore then you have to think about it, and then you're wondering like, how do I feel about it? You know, it's like one of those things.
It's like a feedback loop.
Well, yeah, it's like you put on a shirt and you don't think about it. And then you have to spend the rest of your life answering, why did you wear that shirt? How do you feel about that shirt? Is that your favorite shirt? Who gave you that shirt? Do you remember when you got that shirt? And you're just like, oh my God, it's a shirt. And so there's part of me that is just used to it and it just is what it is. And that's fine. And I've sort of been able to come to terms with that. And then there's sometimes where it is the most frustrating thing to have to deal with. And you just got to say, there are worse problems to have, and you find someone to talk to about it, and you pay that person some money once a week. It's a head trip, and there have been some times that I've been stuck in a hole thinking about it and pondering it and trying to figure it out. But look, I think everyone's trying to figure out their relationship with their parents, and in that way, I'm no different. It's just everyone already knows who he is, and everyone already has an opinion. The only time that it's really difficult is when I'm in a conversation with somebody and they call me Tom, and I go, oh, okay,
yeah,
I know what you're thinking. You know, and it may be subliminal, and sometimes, you know, almost all the times everyone goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I go, it's fine. I get it, because it happens a lot.
I'll say this. It never even occurred to me, and now that is the nightmare scenario.
But with those kind of like social faux pas, you're also in the position then of immediately having to put the other person at ease, and you have to sort of like swallow the feeling that you're having, because the other person feels so embarrassed and so bad about it.
I've sort of have some methods of dealing with it. You know, I'll be at an event and I'll be with him and it'll be an event for him. It's very easy to all of a sudden feel like a sideshow where everyone just sort of comes just to look at you and they're staring and they just go, oh my gosh, you sound just like him. You look just like him. And they don't mean anything by it.
Yeah.
They're not thinking that's a weird thing to say to somebody. And you can either sit there and try to answer that the entire time, or you can just go, I just need to have a response for that. And so the response is, that's not true. I'm younger and much better looking.
Colin is 2 years younger than I am, but I feel like he is about 15 years older than me career-wise, if that makes sense. Yet he still felt a connection to my dead eyes experience.
One of the things that is so unique about your story and your position is that it is the exact opposite of what the story is, right? Or what you think the story is. The story is that he's the nicest guy in Hollywood. He's America's dad, which don't get me started on that. That's a whole nother episode. But you went through an experience where you had to be fired by the most likable guy in the world, right? You were given this glimpse of behind the show business curtain, and it's not pretty always. And you're then reminded of it all the time.
I can no more escape it than you can.
Yeah.
Even if I had wanted to forget about the experience, I'm never short of reminders of it.
My heart breaks for what you went through. And because of the unique situation that I myself am in, not because of who I'm related to, but my own experience as an actor, my own experience with rejection, my own experience also having been on that show and talking with a lot of the other guys on that show about your podcast, I think we all admire what it is that you had to go through and that you've somehow found a way to turn it into something greater than just losing out on some job. So there's just a lot about your story and your situation I can sympathize with.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
My name is Connor Ratliff. I'm an actor and comedian. 22 years ago, I was fired by Tom Hanks. The reason, I was told at the time, he had looked at my audition tape and he thought that I had dead eyes.
So if there's anything that I can do to help in that endeavor, I'll do it. To a degree.
To a degree?
No, I'm kidding.
And that's the short version.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on Digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So it's probably worth explaining how we got Colin on the podcast. It actually wasn't that difficult because he and I have a number of friends in common. One of them is Paul Scheer from Human Giant, The League, and the podcast How Did This Get Made? Paul and Colin used to be neighbors.
So, Connor, I wrote Colin. It took me a couple days just to get it out, and he wrote me back immediately, and he said to me, I've been waiting for this day to arrive. I will email him.
That's just funny to imagine. That's so dramatic.
I know.
I've been waiting for this day to arrive. It's very dramatic. Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. He's a good dude. He's such a good dude. Yeah. And I'm sure that so many people have talked to him about it.
The good news is when I responded, I knew this day would come. What I meant was that it was coming through a proper channel, that it was coming through a mutual acquaintance that we both know and love, because who doesn't love Paul Scheer?
He's the best.
And if someone doesn't love Paul Scheer, don't trust that person.
I knew enough people along the way that I could have asked you early on, but I also knew, like, I didn't want to approach anybody until I could establish what this was, because I wouldn't have wanted you to come onto it with any sense that I'm an ambush artist or that I'm have any, like, weird intent or something.
I all of that was evident. After all these years, I can kind of sense it coming from a mile away.
Colin and I started emailing back and forth in late July 2021, and it turns out that he had been aware of the podcast for a while.
The first time I heard about the podcast, it was on our family text chain.
Oh, wow.
One of my brothers, my youngest brother, Truman, said, like, check out this. I, like, clicked on the link and was just like, oh, that's kind of funny, cool, you know, interesting, like, haha. And then that was kind of it. I forgot about it for a good long while. And then I was on a road trip and I was scrolling through, you know, my podcast app thing, and that came up. And so I was like, oh, well, I'll give this a shot. And as I, like, clicked on it and I saw how many people you had on the podcast already. And I was like, oh, I know that person. I know that person. And then I listened to a couple of episodes on that road trip. Every now and again, I'd sort of, like, check in and sort of see where you were at and what your progress was. Paul had sent me the email. I sent it a response to him saying I knew that this day would come. And I just got, like, a long laugh reply back. And then, unfortunately, sort of life got in the way, and I wasn't able to respond to you right away. And then, finally, I was able to get my shit together and email you.
Colin is a busy guy. While I was working on this season of the podcast, I watched him in American Crime Story Impeachment. And as soon as this season is over, I'll be seeing him in another limited event series, The Offer, about the making of The Godfather. But he's been at this for more than two decades. He was a series regular on the WB sci-fi drama Roswell before he got cast in Band of Brothers.
What was your experience of booking Band of Brothers? Did you have an audition process that you were going through? Did you?
No, I didn't. So I had been working at Playtone the summer prior. I mean, I was, you know, making coffee and taking out garbage and stuff like that. You know, I was doing the proverbial, you know, making tea for Sessions. And I had been hearing about the project. I remember seeing video and pictures from boot camp starting up. And I remember that it was a big thing for everybody that was going in. I think around that time, then I got Roswell. So at that point, then I was officially sort of a working actor. And there was always talk in the office of like, oh, well, we should get you in this thing. You know, you should do something. You know, there's a lot of guys in green, you know. And I remember my dad saying like, oh, yeah, there's this one role that you could do that is a great moment. And it was literally like a moment. And I was like, yeah, like, okay. And then Tony Toe, who was one of the producers, he was going to direct. And I just remember hearing Tony wants you for this role for Lieutenant Jones.
Lieutenant Henry Jones joins Easy Company relatively late in the series, episode 8 of 10, after the Battle of the Bulge in France, and he's initially sidelined for his lack of experience until an officer is needed to go on patrol due to army regulations.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's more than just the one scene of the guy just pointing, yeah. Which is what the old man had sort of suggested. And before I knew it, I was going to England to go do this incredible part. And then I heard that role was literally the role that every actor that had been cast, that was their first audition, that piece. Everybody read for Lieutenant Jones.
Right.
And so everyone was wondering, who the fuck is going to be playing Henry Jones?
So the son of a producer with a recognizable last name went from playing a bit part to a coveted supporting role that everyone was familiar with. A character who was perceived to be an interloper, who no one was particularly impressed with.
Is this the company CP for Easy?
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant Jones looking for Captain Spears.
He's on his way, sir.
I had auditioned for Meg Lieberman many times on other projects. And so it was a combination of Tony fighting for me, because I think deep down he knew everyone is going to be judging whoever we bring in for this character, and that's what we need.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just go hog wild and, you know, put somebody in who everyone's really going to judge. And Meg knew me as an actor and had seen me do stuff and had me for cast readings for a lot of different projects. So she knew. And I think the fact that the two of them went to bat for me is really the thing that made it happen. And everyone else just sort of said, well, if that's what you guys think, then go for it.
Sir, I'd like to volunteer for the patrol.
No, you don't have an experience.
I was the FNG for that episode. I was the fucking new guy for that episode.
Yeah.
But at that point, everyone was kind of done with like hazing the new guys. And they weren't really into going full tilt method. It was just this weird experience that I found myself in. And but in the back of my mind, I was constantly going like, you lucky son of a bitch. Like, this is your first get out of jail free card, which was, is something that I'll be honest, is still something that I wrestle with to this day. And no matter how much I bring it up, all the guys always say like, no, you're right where you're supposed to be.
So you did not audition?
No, I did not audition. I did not.
Have you ever been fired from either a show business job or a non-show business job?
I have never been fired, but I am in constant fear of being fired or never working again. Constant fear.
Yeah.
Look, I've gotten a lot of jobs in my mind and then been told the reason why I didn't get it.
That has the same emotional arc to it when you start sort of planning for like, oh, maybe I'll get this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that there's a way to prepare for those kind of experiences other than, you know, I was thinking like, should there be a class in taking rejection that is part of the training for actors?
This is going to seem like a horrible analogy, but I do believe that there is some truth to it. I remember when I was about to have my first kid. And I was talking with a friend of mine. He had a son. And I was like, all right, man. So like, what's it like? And he just went, it's really hard. And I went, okay. Care to elaborate? And he goes, it's really hard. but it's worth it. And I remember calling him about 3 weeks after my daughter was born. And I said, you motherfucker, you undersold this. It's really hard. Are you kidding me? Like, you, that is the best underselling of a point of all time. And he said, yeah, but there's no way that I can properly convey it to someone until they've gone through it. And even just 3 weeks into it, I bet you have a much better understanding of what I'm talking about. And I went, you're absolutely right. There's no way that you can convey what the roller coaster is like until you've been on it. How do you find joy and appreciation in your own career when the guy in front of you has had like an incredible career that is such rarefied air and has literally like the things that he's been able to accomplish and experience so few people get to do? So how do I find, you know, joy in the one scene I did in, you know, a movie? And I just try to remind myself that it's like, no, I got to do incredible things. And it's even more special when it's stuff that you generate, that someone didn't give you, but that you were able to sort of will into existence. And that, for me, was the Tower documentary.
The 2015 documentary feature film, All Things Must Pass, The Rise and Fall of Tower Records, was a passion project for Colin. A chronicle of the once mighty record store chain, which went from being a billion-dollar company to filing for bankruptcy in less than a decade. I was surprised when I first heard about this movie because, you know, I already had an idea of who Colin was professionally. And up to that point, that didn't include documentary filmmaker. But it also seemed like a good idea for a movie, so in that sense, I just clocked it as another successful project for Colin Hanks.
I had moved to New York.
What year was this?
This was in 2000. Let's see, I moved to New York in 2006. And I was really struggling because all my actor friends that were in New York were all working. I was not. And I was going kind of nuts. And I needed an outlet. And coming from Sacramento and having the relationship that I had with Tower, you know, it coming from my hometown, I just said, I need to do something because I'm not booking anything. I guess I'll make a documentary about Tower Records. And it took me 7 years to finally get around to it. But to get anything made is a fucking miracle. And in that one miracle is a subset of hundreds of other miracles.
Yeah.
A new movie comes out almost every day. It's a miracle if that movie is made. It's a miracle if anyone sees it, and it's a miracle if they think it's any good. And you need those three miracles in order for it to feel like it's been worth it or a success. You have to just be willing to get just one miracle, which is, did we get a chance to make it?
Yeah.
My dad actually refers to it as like the movie gods. There are all of these things that circle and need to happen, and sometimes it works in your favor. And when it doesn't, it's really, really hard.
And I like that you just repurposed what was said to you by your friend about having a kid. It was this exact same words. It's hard. It's really, really hard.
Yeah, it is. It's really hard.
there's no other words to describe it.
It's really, really hard. But it is something that everybody has to come to terms with. Because I'll tell you right now, even my dad will spend time talking with me about how things are not going right or not the way that he envisioned they would for some project. There's two phrases that I hear him say constantly all the time. One is, well, it's one damn thing after another. And then the other one, which is now like a mantra in our family, but it is true, is him just yelling, why would it work for me? Now, normally he's talking about, like, why doesn't the code for the Apple TV work or something? It normally involves some kind of technology because guess what? Old guys don't know how to work technology. You know, he's like everybody else's dad or grandpa as well.
I mean, I'm barely hanging on with my Roku. You know, there's times where I'm...
Yeah, exactly. And so next time the Roku doesn't work, just yell out, why would it work for me? And you'll maybe feel a little bit better about the universe. But even he has those same issues where he's thinking creatively, this is how it should be. It shouldn't be this hard. But yet it is, because shit goes wrong.
So during the period when you were in New York City, did you ever go into Barnes & Noble Union Square?
Yes.
I wonder if we were in the same building at the same time. That was where I worked for about 13 years.
I know. I remember that episode.
That episode of my life. A 13-year-long episode.
We probably were.
And we were probably both kind of struggling at that time. It's a funny thing to think about.
Yeah.
Stuff like that sort of delights me, not the struggling or the suffering or anything, but like when I talked to the guy who ended up playing Private Zelinsky about, you know, a decade later, he was working in a bookstore in Canada and Ron Livingston came in and he kind of hid from him because he was embarrassed that they'd been in a scene together and now he was in a, he was working. And I was like, Adam, like you and I were both working in a bookstore while I was imagining that, well, whoever got my part must be living the life that I, you know, wanted.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, and he's doing great as an actor. You know, he's got a great career still in England. We're all doing fine. But during that moment, I was like, that's kind of beautiful that you look back and you realize like everybody has these like low points and these parts where even people who look like they're having great success mm-hmm. can often be going through the worst year of their life for reasons that we know nothing about.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the... I got to admit, I feel kind of guilty because I sort of feel like a lot of times I'm telling you things that might make this harder for you. But
I welcome that. I welcome
that. Okay. All right. One of the things that is so unique about band is that the experience that they went through and that I was fortunate enough to be able to dance with for 4 weeks, going through boot camp, shooting this show that was so huge and so different and playing real people and a lot of times meeting the people that they were playing, and then the show premiered. Every week we got together and watched at a different person's house, and there was a huge premiere in Normandy, and they brought all the actors and all of the real Easy Company, and they all said at that time, like, you know, they'd been going to reunions for, you know, years and years and years, and they said, you guys are going to do it too. And 20 years later, we still do a reunion every year. And there are a lot of guys that aren't working as actors anymore. They're like, yeah, no, didn't pan out. But we still see each other every year and we talk about what it is that we went through. And now we've seen kids grow up, but some of us have gotten divorced and remarried and fallen in love and had kids. And it's just like all of these different things. I'm laying all of this on you, you know, because there's a connection. And so that experience that he had of seeing Ron and, you know, in a bookstore, like, that's one of those scenarios where I said, you know, I would say like, oh man, he should have gone right up to Ron and said hi.
When we return, we'll pivot to talking about my Band of Brothers experience. Dead Eyes will be right back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sometimes when I interview people, they only have a passing knowledge of what the podcast is about. They might know the premise, but you can hear the surprise in their voices when they realize that my goal is to actually talk to Tom Hanks. There were certain obvious questions that I didn't think would be useful to ask Colin directly. He's heard the podcast. He's heard me pose these questions dozens of times. He's even heard me speculate as to what the answers might be. My thinking was that if there was anything Colin specifically wanted to tell me, he would.
Actually, you want to know what? It was talking with a friend of mine who was actually in Band of Brothers, an actor by the name of Dexter Fletcher, who's now an incredible director. He said something that made me go, fuck, I got to email Connor. Because he told a story from episode 5, from the episode that the old man directed.
Crossroads.
Crossroads. Yes, that was the title of that episode.
Yeah.
And he said something that it instantly made me think of you, because I think they were lining up some sort of shot, and it was like a close up on Dexter, and my dad said, "Hey, lift that helmet up, because I need to see this. I need to see those eyes, man. That's where the whole story is."
Oof.
Yeah.
Wow.
And of course, you know, he said that, and I go, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Have you guys heard about this podcast? And, you know, then talked with Dex for about 20 minutes about that.
Even a small detail like that is so delightful to me, because in some ways it gives the firing an added layer of meaning. It wasn't just a random thing that happened. It was like, no, the eyes are essential. It's that I was collateral damage in this casting process.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe not in a meaningless way. Maybe there's a way to find like a, you know,
it was,
you know?
Totally. I mean, you haven't asked me, but I have a feeling what probably transpired is this. There's two continents in which this is being cast. There's everything going on in the US, and then there's everything going on in the UK. Obviously, any of the big roles in the UK would have to come to the United States and go through some sort of, you know, final vetting process. And then there's the other roles that can get cast off of a tape. I think you got caught in a little bit of a horrible perfect storm in which the episode in which you have been cast is also being directed by one of the guys that has final say on who gets to be in all of those little roles. Now, again, there are no little roles.
Yes, but there are some roles that don't do that much.
There are. Well, but that is a role that on the surface,
yeah,
people will say probably not that big of a role.
Right.
And I would even venture to say there are probably people within the production that were just like, two lines, three lines, not that big of a deal. Here's who we got. This is who we like. Someone has shown that tape. They say, okay, fine. And it just sort of like gets through a crack. And then it just so happens that the stopgap measure is the guy in charge, who happens to not only be in charge of the whole series, but is also in charge of that episode. And he has to say, hey, I don't remember approving this, maybe. I don't know if this is what happened. I will say this.
Right. We are in hypothetical territory.
But I have a feeling the way that he was looking at that role, he was looking at it as something much more important than maybe other people were.
Right.
And so then he says, wait, I need to take a look at this again. And I have a feeling he saw something in that tape that said, I need to see him. I'd like to see him to be able to give you the chance to do it in person.
Yeah.
Which is, again, what makes this even harder to deal with. But there was that, which is actually a good thing. And I have a feeling that whatever it was, I have a feeling like it was somebody else's fuck up. And then at like the last minute, the man in charge says like, all right, someone here fucked up. And maybe it was, I need something in the, you know, it maybe it was something like, I need to be able to see the story here.
And you're pointing to the eyes as you say that.
I'm pointing to the eyes, yeah.
Well, and as you said, as you described, the show is a lot of guys dressed in green.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
And Zelinsky being one that needs to serve a certain function in a scene, mm-hmm. maybe needs to be look a little different, needs to look a little bit specific to be a contrast to Winters and to Nixon, and, you know?
It could be a scenario in which Nixon and Winters need to have the dead eyes, and that character didn't. And so in the mix, someone then just latches onto the phrase dead eyes and says, oh, well, you had it. You know what I mean? Maybe that could be it. I don't know. Whatever it is, I have a feeling that everyone else was overlooking something about what that character needed to bring. And that was never conveyed to you.
The context that I think is crucial for all of it is that all of this happened. This moment of confusion and miscommunication or bad communication happened in the midst of a team of people trying to recreate World War II for television. That it's like, it's not like this was the only thing they were doing and they bungled it. The undertaking that was happening, you know, you're going to break a few eggs, you know, it's a big omelet. By now, you may be wondering if I'm ever going to ask Colin if his dad listens to the podcast, or if he'll ask him to come be a guest. And the truth is, I never did either of those things. Colin and I talked for 3.5 hours, way longer than I've talked to anybody else for this. He deliberately moved our interview to later in the day when he knew he'd have a bigger window of time. We discussed acting and improv and career stuff and Tower Records, and it was a really nice conversation where we got to know each other. I didn't want to pivot into me using him as a conduit to get to his dad. And by that, I don't mean I lost my nerve. I never planned on asking those questions in the first place. It meant a lot that Colin was willing to come on the show and talk with me, a person who he could have easily seen as a guy lurking in some weird corner of show business, obsessing over something his dad may or may not have done. And it's not like we didn't talk about his dad. We talked about him a lot. I'm guessing probably more than Colin actually wanted to. Do you have any advice for me in terms of the direction from what you've heard that the podcast is going in?
I think there's a lot to unpack in that question. Because in one regard, it's important to come to terms with the idea that you are never going to get a satisfactory answer. And that it will always just be this kind of, is that it? Oh, well, thanks. You'll never really get to the bottom of it.
I think I should also admit that after all the time and effort I've invested in this singular pursuit, there are some answers that I don't want to get secondhand. My producers, however, are a little more eager for any kind of closure we can get.
Colin, do you genuinely feel that there's no answer to the why behind Connor's firing?
I don't know if you could ever really get that specific answer because too much time has passed. There's no real way to get sort of the definitive answer amid the amount of time that has passed and the chaos that show business exists on, especially the casting process with all the different variables at play. So it's not even really about whether you're going to be able to get the idea of, hey, did Tom Hanks say that I have dead eyes? You're never going to get that answer. You're not even going to get close to a real resolution. I think really at best you can hope for a sense of resolution and a sense of an answer. And like a lot of things in life, that's just going to have to be good enough.
This isn't exactly the first time I've been told that I'm not going to get the answers. People have been telling me that for years now. But it is the first time where that message is coming directly from a person who might actually know. And I'm not sure that I fully absorbed the impact of his words until our conversation was over. I thought Colin could have been telling me, I've talked to my dad about this, and he does not have the answers you were looking for. Or he could have been signaling to me that my dad's not going to want to discuss this with you. Be prepared to never hear back from him about coming on your podcast. Part of me wondered if maybe this was as far as I was ever going to get, and I would just have to be happy with it. Another part of me knows that's not really how I'm wired.
Everything you're saying makes absolute sense to me, and yet there will always be that one voting member somewhere in the parliament of my brain that's like, counterpoint, what if I do get the answer?
It's just like, we're still going to look, right? We're still going to look for the answer, right? Having said that, please say hi to your dad for me.
I will.
Dead Eyes is a production of HeadGum Studios. It was created by me, Connor Ratliff. It's written by me, and it's mostly me that you hear talking, including now. The show is produced and edited by Harry Nelson and Mike Comite. Our associate producer is Jordan Allen. Special thanks to my guests, Colin Hanks and Paul Scheer. Thanks to Hyperobject Industries. Also thanks to Amy Mann for letting us use this song that's playing in the background. It's the title track from her 2002 album, Lost in Space. If you like Dead Eyes, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Twitter at Dead Eyes Podcast, and talk about us nicely on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is deadeyespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your dad about this show, especially if your dad is Tom Hanks, who, and this is something I was desperately trying to squeeze into the actual episode, has one credit on IMDb that he shares in common with both Colin and me. And like Band of Brothers, it is an HBO credit. We have all appeared on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Colin was on it once in season 2. Tom has appeared on it twice in seasons 1 and 4. I have been on the show 3 times in seasons 4, 6, and 8. I'm not saying that to brag. This isn't a competition. These are just the numbers. Or as some call them, the numb 3 years.
Fuck you.
Thanks for listening. Be smart. Stay safe. Like
was a HeadGum Original.